Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic.
David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. The AA preamble states that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So tonight we're talking about step one, part two. Some people divide that into powerless and unmanageable. We divide it into the physical versus the mental. So tonight we're gonna be talking about the obsession of the mind. And I'm going to read a paragraph on page 5. And if you would, please welcome our panel tonight. We have Mike and Jim. All right, this is from Bill's story. I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw that I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way, and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed, and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then, and I did. Mike?
Hey everybody, my name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Mike.
My sobriety date is January 7th, 2008. I have a home group, Living Sober. It's on 49th Street. We meet on Thursday at 5:30 down by ODU. I have a sponsor. I tried to duck him coming in here tonight. He caught me and asked me to do this. I was, as you can tell, I was just ready to come in and hang out in the back. This is my third time doing this, and this is God getting back at me, because the first two times I did it, I had this stuff printed out 2 months ago, and I was going over it and over it and over it. Now I'm a nervous wreck, so whatever comes out now, here we go. Bill's story used to, I hated it. It confused me. I didn't like reading about a guy that I thought was 200 years old who drank like I did. And that's exactly what he just said. You know, I did this a million times. I stopped. At the end, I stopped every day for 5.5 years. I stopped. I quit. Every single day I quit. And during the day, while I'm doing my thing at school, am I doing my thing at work, while I'm all of a sudden it comes like, man, I'm going to be out of here soon in an hour, and it's not going to be a good idea to drink. I have to go get my son at the babysitter's. You know, I have two girls in high school who are working really hard. My wife has been promoted. I'm supposed to be taking care of them. And I stop before I even pick him up, and I start drinking in the car. And I pick him up at the babysitter's, and I start drinking, and I get home, and I tell my two daughters what a rough day I've had already, and I need to go into the garage, because I was a very athletic alcoholic. I took 6 beers every day into the garage. I didn't take a clock. I knew if I rode the bike for 6 beers, that was an hour. You know, so I'd ride this exercise bike for an hour. While they were doing their homework, they're watching the baby, and then I'd start calling my wife going, where the hell are you? They need to eat. You know, I can't cook. I can't do anything because I'm already heading towards Drunkville. And so I did every day. And I would, my head would be ringing every single day. Like, just like Bill said, why am I doing this? Why can't I stop? Why? I know it's not going to end well. I know it's not going to be a good idea. I know I'm not doing anything a dad does. I'm not doing anything a father does. I'm not doing anything a husband does. And I don't care. And that's one of the toughest things I ever say in these rooms. And I don't care. You know, I didn't. My wife, be damned. My kids, be damned. I don't care. I had to get drunk. And once I was drunk, everything was good. Don't come in the garage while I'm exercising. You know, watch your brother. Do you know how to change a diaper? I don't. You know, that's what I, you know, go in there and finish that. And then I always call her, knowing how hard she's working. Where are you? You got to come home and take care of us. Not them, us. I can't take care of me. So, like I said, I hated this book. I hated this story because this man drank just like I did. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. I'm Jim Scarpine. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
The sobriety date's July the 25th, 1971. And I picked up one white chip. Haven't had to go out again. I got here with the gift of desperation. I'm going to jump all the way back to chapter 11, page. I don't know what page it is, but it describes how my last 6 or 8 months were about wishing for the end and no longer picturing life with alcohol or without it. But I thought my drinking was normal because everybody I knew drank like I did. If you didn't drink like I did, I didn't know you. It was that simple, and it was easy. I was in the Navy, so you know, it was easy to hide behind with the gang of guys that drank. And I think the only time I ever really got honest about my drinking, excuse me, we had a thing when I was on the West Coast, the squadron I was in, that discussed alcoholism and sailors or something like that. I forget what it was. But anyway, the division officer asked me why I drank so much. And I told him, I said, well, I could tell you that, you know, it's because the wife left me and she took the kids and the dog and I'm all alone, boo-hoo, and all that. But the fact of the matter is, I like the stuff. And that was the truth. I loved it. As long as I was away from it. When we go to sea, it didn't bother me after 3 or 4 days to get over it. And I was fine without it. But as we neared port, that last 2-3 days, I can feel it in the back of my head saying it's time to drink. And I found out real early a way I could get on off the ship a half an hour ahead of the Liberty call. And I put that to use, and I was usually half lit by the time they called Liberty away. Something in my head said, you know, you deserve this. It's a good idea, go get drunk. And I listened to it for too many years, really. A lot longer than I should have. But so far, that's my story. I kind of like Bill's story, not like you, Maya, sorry.
Sorry.
But, you know, he drank like I did. And I think that's what caught my attention at the very first meeting I went to. They drank like I did. And, you know, times when they shouldn't have drank, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And we drank. And every time I picked up a drink, as I said before, hundreds of times, every drink I ever took tasted like another one. And that's what it was. I didn't stop until I passed out, got thrown out, or ran out of money. One of the three. Yeah. Next.
We're going to continue on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly, even made a little money. Surely this was the answer: self-knowledge.
Yeah, self-knowledge is great stuff. I could talk myself into anything. I mean, I talked myself into every drunk. You know, I knew it was going to be a bad idea. Knew what was coming, but man, once I started, I knew that everything was going to be okay. You know, we couldn't pay the bills. But once I got drunk, that was going to take care of itself. You know, everything was going to be okay. Bills were magically going to be paid. You know, I love where it says we're weakened when it comes to combating liquor. I had an excuse built in. The man said it. Okay, I'm going back to liking Bill now. You know, he said we're weakened when it comes to that. You know, I couldn't do relationships at all. Couldn't do it. Still have trouble with it, but I couldn't do them at all then. But I knew that you know, I just, the self-knowledge was they loved me for who I was, for what I am, and I didn't care. Again, I'm back to I don't care. I didn't care a lot. And that's hard to say. I don't sit here and say it. It hurts. It hurts my heart. You know, but I didn't care. I just knew that, I'll just stop. I knew when I got drunk that everything was going to be okay. And that self-knowledge was self-centered. You know, I was okay. I was fine once I got drunk. My day was complete. I was good. I did not care about anything that was going on around me. I didn't care about what anybody felt. I didn't care what anybody did, as long as Mike got to get drunk. Thanks.
I don't know if I promised my wife or not that I was going to quit drinking. In fact, I know I didn't try to stop drinking until maybe 3-4 months before I got to AA. Drinking wasn't my problem. It was all these other problems I had. Blacking out. Now, I didn't want to black out. I didn't like that. So what I was going to try to do was improve my memory. Really, you know, and I was going to think real hard while I was drinking about what was going on and what I did and what I said and who said this and who said that, so that I'd remember it the next day. And it never worked. I'd always end up blacked out, which is a side note. That, you know, that can be an advantage and a disadvantage. It's a disadvantage because you got to believe anything somebody tells you did. But it can be an advantage when you get here because it makes a fourth step awfully short. I just, like I said before, you know, as long as I was separated from the liquor, from anything, beer, wine, liquor, I was all right. And people used to tell me, Scarpine, if you'd just quit drinking, you'd be a hell of a good guy or a hell of a good sailor. And as soon as the ship left port, I quit drinking. But I did not become a hell of a nice guy or a good sailor. I did my job, but I was always waiting for that next import period. You know, that obsession of the mind didn't faze me a bit. I got it. I remember when I was 17 years old, my brother got married, and we'd go to visit him in his house. He set up housekeeping. He had a nice bar down in his basement. And he'd keep us up in the front room and give us one drink. And I'd wonder, you know, when's the next one coming? What's he hoarding it for? Is he waiting for World War III or something? And, you know, it never occurred to me that that was normal. Because everybody I knew drank like I did. So, next.
We're going to continue on page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. Mike?
I'd like to switch seats with Jim, because every time he says something, it triggers something in my head. When he said he was a blackout drinker and tried to fix his memory, my house was full of sticky notes when I drank, because I was a blackout drinker too, and I really was embarrassed, you know, talking to my parents and or my kids and trying to remember what I said. And every note around the house would be, find the red note or find the yellow note, you know, because I'd write a bunch of them and I'd stick them different places. And my kids, it was sad at the end, could tell how drunk I was by the writing at the end of each list. Like, ooh, he was doing good last night. Look at that thing. You know, and they'd be everywhere. And then, you know, they'd run around and move my list. I'm like, what a bunch of assholes. You know, what am I supposed to do with this? Excuse me. With that, what am I supposed to do with this? But this, in here, our so-called willpower, you know. I have three brothers, and one of my brothers was so excited when I quit drinking. I drank for 29 years, and he gave me this big, huge hug, and he goes, Mike, I knew you had the willpower. I knew it had it in you. I knew you could do it. I'm like, dude, really? Do you think I would have waited 29 years if I'd had the will? I don't have any willpower. I couldn't stop this, and I'm sure we're going to get to this. There was no way I could stop this. I didn't know why I was doing it. I had no idea. It's up here. It's like what we're talking about. I knew that every time, towards the end, at the beginning, some of those were fun. I knew when I was going to get drunk, I was going to have a good time. And I did. At the end, it was terrible every single day. And I did it every single day. And I tried to explain to him, dude, you really honestly think I wouldn't have stopped if I could have just willed myself to stop? But I can't talk to him like that. He's not an alcoholic. He was just happy. You know, I'm glad he was happy I stopped, but I argued with him once and that's it. We don't talk about it, you know, because there's nothing I can say to him. You know, there's absolutely nothing I can say to him. And it says in here, the memory of suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month. I can't even remember a day. And that's an honest answer at the end. I knew, and again, I teach school, most of you know that, and I've been, from my second wife, my wife now, I've been separated five times, four times sober, one time drunk, and it usually happened over the summer, and I went crazy over the summer. I slept with people I shouldn't have, rarely, at the end, the last time, the last summer I got kicked out, I didn't even care that I got caught. There I am, not caring again. Didn't matter to me. Try explaining to your wife, your significant other, that girl didn't matter. I was just trying to find somebody to drink with me. Try explaining that one. And trying to sell it off as, we good? You know? Right? That's okay, right? Daddy's home. Everybody's okay. And I couldn't even remember the night before, because I swear to God, and my wife didn't even know this at one point. I'd get up to go to school, and I'd get up at 4:30 in the morning to start getting ready for these little people. You know, I'm in there taking a shower, I'm in there crying, my head, my stomach hurt. I'm like, I'm not doing this today. There's no way. There's absolutely no way. I'd get to school, I'd sit in the same toilet stall, and it has this nice cool wall, and I'd put my head against it, just waiting for the bell to ring, going, God, make this headache go away. Because you can imagine 20 little people where you're the king, and they're coming in. They don't care how hungover you are. Hey, what are we doing today? You know, let's sing, let's dance, let's go. And I'm like, oh my God, my eyes are coming apart. And I'd get to lunch, and you know, you get those big school rolls, and you'd fill your stomach up, and you start feeling better. I'm like, yeah, this feels good. In a couple hours, I'm going to drink. Where did that come from? But as soon as I ate and felt good, I'm going to drink again today. No question. I had no defense. Nothing. Nothing could stop me from picking up that first drink. Nothing. And I'll say it again, probably can get to it later, but Mike's willpower was non-existent. None. Zero. I didn't know anything about a higher power. I didn't know anything about any of that. I just knew that I was going to drink. Bottom line, it was going to happen again today. And then tomorrow I'm going to quit. And then by the afternoon I'm going to do it again. No matter what anybody said, no matter who started crying, or who got mad at me, no matter how much money I spent, no matter who I slept with, what I took, I'm going to drink again. I had no defense. Thanks.
I just had a thought and I lost it. I shouldn't have coughed. You know, we hear so much in AA about remember your last drunk. If you don't remember your last drunk, you haven't had it yet. I hate that. I remembered just about every drunk I was ever on. And all it did was make me resolve that tonight's going to be different. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. I won't black out. I won't get quite as drunk. I won't go to jail. Tonight's going to be different. I'm going to drink differently. Maybe I'll use a chaser instead of drinking it straight, you know. But never once did I say, no, I'm not going to drink. Because isn't that what everybody does? Everybody I knew did. And, you know, that's the only thing I knew how to do. I'll spend a lot of time in San Diego. They got a beautiful zoo. They got, you know, all this tourist stuff. Never saw any of them. Never saw a bit of them. Right on the waterfront, all the bars. Going to Hong Kong, I never got off the waterfront. Places that people pay good money to go see, as long as there was something to drink. As soon as I found it, that was it. And that's as far as I went. It wasn't until I got sober that I started seeing things and really doing things. But always, you know, I was so anxious to get ashore somewhere, wherever it was, so I could drink. And I swear, pulling into some of them ports, you could smell it a mile out. At least I could. My mouth would start watering, my tongue get dry, and hurry up. And I made it in, and that was it. I was, like I say, you know, I had to be separated from it before I could do without it.
All right. Just to sync everybody up here, we're talking about step one tonight, which deals with powerlessness and hopelessness. None of these paragraphs are particularly optimistic. We're just talking about the problem tonight. So, you guys want to twist into some hope at some point, that's fine. But the paragraphs are not going to do that. So, we're going to move on to page 30. Most of us, probably a large number, most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he's bodily or mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it's not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This was the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently may be has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. Mike?
Okay, let's get some hope. damn, that's pretty harsh reading right there. The idea that somehow, someday, we'll control enjoyment or drinking never, ever occurred to me until I got here. I was having fun. I had a blast. I had a great time. There were times I could convince myself at the end, when I'm telling you how miserable it was, what a great time I was having. And when I got here, I thought I was coming to the professionals. You know, the people that are going to show me how to drink, you know, just have two beers. You know, you guys are alcoholics, you drink a lot. Show me how to have two and be nice and have fun. And you know, don't laugh in someone's face louder than they can talk just so they'll shut up. Don't, you know, don't go flirt with somebody over there when your wife's standing right over there. You know, what? And I never, see, we're getting positive, aren't we? I didn't know how to do any of that. I had a feeling I was an alcoholic, but I couldn't twist my mind around that. You know, we've all heard the story of what an alcoholic looks like and what they are and what they do. And I'm a little kindergarten teacher. Kindergarten teachers aren't drunks. You know, I'm with other people's children. Every day they trust me with their most precious thing in the world. I'm not a drunk. I just like to drink a lot, you know, and that's it. But, you know, in this book, there's some, that Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, that normal was not good enough ever. When it switched and I got drunk, rock and roll happened, and I mean it to the nth degree, and I would just go, and I would go till there was nothing. It was crazy. You know, Jim said, you know, if you just stop, you'd be a great whatever you are. I did. I was a great teacher. There's a part in that, in my end of my drinking, where I was a lucky teacher. You know, I was lucky that I didn't get that bad off until that point in my career where, you know, I could pull some lesson plans from somewhere or make up something, because I was hurt. You know, there was 5 years I was hurt. I did not give my best to a lot of kids. And when I made my amends, I can't go back and find every kid, you know, but I've made amends to every principal I had and said, look, there was a part in there I didn't give my best, and I will. From now on, I'll give my best. It says the delusion that we're like other people has to be smashed. That's, again, not the happiest You know, I don't know what David wants from me right now. You know, smashed. I've got to be laid out. Laid out like crushed. All right, I'll throw some hope. But when you are crushed, man, you can come. And when you do these steps and you come to these meetings and you get a sponsor and you say some prayers and you help other people, when your life, whenever it happens, you know, because there's no time frame on this, but when it happens and that 180 does happen, normal right now to me is the coolest thing I've ever happened to me. I'm going to go, after you're done here, I go pick up my son and we're going to go home. That's it. I didn't say anything about stopping and getting some beers. You know, I'm going to go home and watch TV, or we're going to go home and him and I will do something. I'll go home and I'll be able to talk to my wife without slurring. I can call my mom right now and talk to her because, you know, before noon, afternoon, I wouldn't talk to her because I could hear the hurt. You're slurring, Mike. You told me that story yesterday, Mike. I'm like, all right, so I'll just stop calling you for 3 years. Good? You know, we okay with that? But once you just know, and I don't know the point, and there's a lot of, you know, I said a lot of I don't care. There's also a lot of I don't know. I don't know when the obsession left me. I don't know when I started to pray every day. I don't know when I said I was an alcoholic and meant it, but I don't have to do any of that stuff anymore. I went down that well. I was smashed, and I came up. You know, I have, you know, part of my story and a lot of people, this, that, I have a family. Somehow it worked. It's not perfect. It's not Leave It to Beaver family. If you saw it, you'd be like, what in the world? But I have that family because of AA. You know, I have a little bit of money because of AA. I still have a really cool job because of this. I was getting to the point. I'd lost almost everything except for the job, and it was coming. So if you're not smashed yet or down there yet, when you do, and you, like I said, when it flips, when that 180 happens, it's the most beautiful. Normal's a pretty cool place. Thanks.
People used to tell me I was an alcoholic. And I remember back in the 60s, people would say, you know, Jim, you're a damn alcoholic. No, I'm no alcoholic. I'm a drunk. Alcoholics got to go to them damn meetings. That's all I knew. And I could always find another one that was worse off than I was. There was always somebody a little worse shape, you know. I remember got Mac. He used to come into one of the bars I worked at part-time. Now, he was an alcoholic because he had to have his shot poured into a big glass. Otherwise, he'd shake all over the place. I could still drink out of a shot glass. So I wasn't an alcoholic. Mac was. I could always find somebody like that. Until the day I looked in the mirror, and that's the guy I was looking at, was the alcoholic. But by then, you know, that was about 3 months before I got sober. So I went, you know, the whole time. Didn't mind being a drunk. The troubles I got into were just part of the price I paid just to drink, you know. The overnights in jail. I twisted that around to find that it was actually 4 hours of freeboard. You know, free cup of coffee in the morning, and then when they kicked you out, if the timing was right, there was a few bars that would open up at 6 o'clock for sick call. If you went in and let somebody know you was in jail that night, they'd buy you a drink. So it was a win-win situation, you know. Everything was just part of the price I had to pay to get drunk. And then I came into AA and found out there was a price to pay to get sober, too. So I had to do a lot of changing. And some of it was kind of hard, you know. I had to start keeping promises and cut back on my lying. And if it wasn't mine, you know, wasn't going to pick up. I don't want to skip on to honesty on this, but I heard something that really stuck in my mind. He says, there's only three things you got to remember about honesty. If it ain't true, don't say it. If it ain't yours, don't take it. If it ain't right, don't do it. And I think if I follow those three, you know, I can knew pretty good. But, you know, for the longest time, I denied that I was an alcoholic. And drunk, yes. Drunk, yes. I didn't mind being a drunk. That's about all I got.
All right. We're going to continue on page 41. This one's a little out of context, but they've told a bunch of stories where guys didn't plan on drinking, and then the thought struck them they'd have a drink, and then they did drink. Page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went over carefully that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carefully as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remember what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesized that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more. For what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. Mike?
I think the main in mind, what I heard in this is, I did this all the time. You know, I wasn't gonna drink, wasn't a good idea. I drank, you know, but over time, you know, I'm gonna skip like Jim did a little bit. Even when I'm sober now, and I've been sober for a little bit, if I don't keep up with my spiritual activities, my work, those blank spots come now. They still come. You know, the sun's out. Baseball's coming. I'm okay. I've been here a while. I did that. At the 5-year mark, I was cured of this. And I left AA when everything was good. Everything was great. My wife was good. The kids were good. And I didn't go to meetings for a long time. I didn't call anybody for a long time. And a year and a half, my oldest daughter, who lived with it for every day of her life, from the day she was born to the day I stopped drinking, walked up to me and said, "It's the last time you went to a meeting, man." And I'm like, "Fuck, oh, wow." You know, it took that kid, and you know, she's an adult now, and she'll always be my kid, but that kid knew, you know, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. Dude, you're not doing it right. You're not just, being good isn't good enough. Because you're a turd, you know, something's not right. You're not doing it right. So get to a meeting. And there's still something. It's in here that, you know, that the thinking part to me had to leave. I couldn't think myself out of a drink. I tried that. I had to take some action, and the actions were taught to me in here. You know, I could think myself out of anything, and I could talk myself into anything, and that didn't work. It really didn't work. And when I finally, later on, when I got a higher power, and I did all the things that you guys taught me to do, that I knew that just thinking was going to get me back in trouble. You know, thinking everything was okay was going to get me to drink. It's not. Once you start thinking again, I started thinking of Mike again and not of my higher power and everybody around me. And, you know, once Mike's okay, Mike's good, let's drink. And that's a bad place to be. Even though I've been sober for a while, you know, if I let go and Mike takes charge again, Mike's going to drink again. Thanks.
I'd never been to AA. I never had a slip, so I can't really identify with that part of getting drunk and the things that the people in AA told him. Because I was convinced that I was gonna die drunk. In fact, I was in a psych ward, and I was asked if I had tried AA. And my answer was no, it won't work. Because I didn't know anything about it, And if you don't know anything about it, why try it, right? Well, an AA meeting came to the psych ward, and they invited me. And I said to myself, I'll go to the meeting, and then if they ask me again, I can tell them I tried it and it didn't work. And I haven't had a drink since that meeting. What they told me about themselves described me. The way they drank, how they felt, what they thought about it, and the whole thing. I said, yeah, okay, I identified with them. Of course, it took them 5 hours at that first meeting. But I needed it, and it was a way to get out of the ward. There's a lot of crazy people in them things. So, my first exposure was a convincer. If nothing else, there I was in that psych ward. I wasn't drinking, but I wasn't happy about it. And here was a few people that dressed neat, clean, they shaved. I'm sorry. But they were out on the street and they were enjoying life and not drinking. And they gave me what Dave talked about earlier, the hope that if it worked for them, it probably worked for me too. And for all these years, it has. As far as the meetings go, I love AA meetings. I still go to about 3 a week on the average. But I was forced to find out early on that I can stay sober without meetings. Because right out of treatment, from that psych ward I went to treatment. I got out of there and I went to an area where there were no AA meetings. And I was stuck. And I had a guy on the phone. I said, what am I supposed to do? And he says, use your big book and my higher power. You'll be all right. Because I didn't have one of my own. I had a big book. And, he promised me if I did that, I'd be okay. And it worked. And that's the hope I can pass on to everybody else. If you use a big book and a higher power, no matter whose you use, if you don't have one of your own, use mine. You can do it. David.
Jim, tell that part. Did he say read the big book?
Oh, yeah, no. He said, use the big book. He said, if you use your big book. Well, he asked me. He said, do you have a big book? I said, yeah. He said, do you have a higher power? I said, I'm not too sure yet. He said, well, use your big book and my higher power. You'll be okay. Well, I can't lose anything. I started. And then about, 3 days, a week later, I realized he said use it, not read it. As you can, and this is not original. I thought it was for many years till I heard a tape from a woman back in the 40s that used it. You can starve to death reading a cookbook.
Thank you. All right. Our last paragraph of the evening is on page 43. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases. Neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
All right, here we go. There it is. I was on step one for 10 months. I was doing great. I checked number one off the list. I thought that it was a list. You did it. Why did it suck so bad? Nothing was right. Nothing was going. I felt better. That's it. I felt better. Spending money I still didn't have, talking to people on the phone and stuff, fill in the blanks there that I shouldn't have been doing. And I heard at meetings, you guys read these ninth step promises. Didn't hear the part about ninth step. I just heard promises. So I'm like, shit ain't working. It's not working. None of this is happening. Not a bit of this is happening. And, you know, I was going to meetings almost every day. Almost. There's part of the problem. Almost. And I'd find the meetings that lasted 45 minutes, because they are out there if you look hard enough, because I'd leave at the 15 minutes left, go sit in the car and cry for 15 minutes, go home at 10 after, so they knew I went to a meeting, you know, and go, hey, I went to a meeting. And they were like, great, go tomorrow. And I'm like, you know, I went today. We're good? And no. And then they'd all give me that big hug. I've always told you about that hug. And they didn't hug me because they loved me. They hugged me because they were smelling me, you know, to make sure I had been where I said I was going to be. You know, it was, they knew what beer smelled like. They knew right away. But, you know, and I was very, very, very upset at my first sponsor. This is just not working, man. None of this is working. I'm calling you. You don't answer. You know, I'm showing up. Nothing's working. And he goes, why don't we look at step two? And I'm like, okay. Because I am at my 10th month was my jumping off point. If I don't get this higher power, I don't have a defense. It's gone. And I'm going to drink. And even though I'm going to jump ahead, it says, you know, came to believe. It doesn't say believe next Tuesday. If I had a time frame on this, I'd have been gone. You know, it took me 10 months to understand step one. And he says, just be willing, you know, be willing to give this a try. You know, say a few simple prayers. I don't know how. And I'm 45 years old. You know, we pray. I have three brothers. Every day we prayed, I thought, you know, God is good, God is great. Let us sing before food. Amen. We'd eat. Wah. You know, we'd go to bed and we'd say a prayer. I knew how to pray. We prayed twice a day. I was great at it. And I didn't know how to pray at all. I didn't know how to not ask for me. You know, I didn't know how to do that. Back to my sticky notes, I wrote pray on a sticky note, put it on the bathroom mirror. You know, and like I said, my girls were teenagers then. So there's teenage friends who'd come and go, oh, look, your dad's praying to himself in the mirror. Look at him. You know, and it's just so I wouldn't forget. And then there came a day at a meeting, I got scared to death because I thought I had forgotten to pray that day. And I hadn't. I prayed, you know, and it's just like now it's a routine. There's different times in the day I pray. There's different times in the day where my higher power talks to me. You know, I know he really wants something when I get in the car and the radio's not on. You know, it's like, oh, wow. Because it's usually on, you know, and it's quiet. And it's like, maybe I better get some stuff straight. Maybe we better talk, you know. And it's just, and the other part, when you get to step three, is I get to choose this higher power. It's the coolest thing in the world. I don't have to pick anything that I don't want to. Nothing. How I beat myself up for 10 months to do two things that haven't, you know, came to believe. I get to pick when. And I get to pick who or what or how. I made that so hard. Just to fight this, just to see if I could do it one more time, you know. And I do thank God that I did stop fighting and said, here I am, you know, take me for whatever good it's going to be. And I do have a defense against the first strength, and it's called my higher power. And I told you a story earlier. When Mike's in charge, man, Mike's going to go, you know, when I talk about myself in third person, I know it's really coming. You know, Mike's in trouble. Mike's doing good. Here it comes. You know, and one of my sponsees is here, and I love telling this story. This is what happens when Mike takes charge. There's a pile of dirty dishes at my house, and I'm standing there. I'm looking at him. Why don't I do the dishes? But my wife walks in. I said, you see that pile of dishes? She goes, yeah, why can't you do those? And I go, your hair's getting a little gray. Why don't you dye that today? What? You know, that's just pure mean. That's just like, what? Dude. And that's, and she will say, she'll throw it right at me. She goes, that's how you used to act when you were drunk, not sleeping with somebody else, not stumbling and falling down, not paying our bills. That little mean you. You've got to win. You've got to hurt me. That's it right there. You know, that's when it hits me that Mike needs to get a talk to somebody, and whoever my higher power is, that's who I need to get a talk to. And again, I'll go back to, this has worked for a long time. Talking to my higher power has become normal as my life has become normal. And I haven't taken a drink in a long time. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike.
I guess I could say I'm living proof that no human power could have relieved my alcoholism, but God could and would if he were sought. After I did that tour where I was without AA and made it through, 6 months I was supposed to be there, got reduced to 2 months. I got sent back down to Oceana and got put on night shift. And there weren't a whole lot of meetings around here then. Not very, very few day meetings. So I didn't get to a whole lot of meetings for a while. And then when I had 11 months, went aboard a carrier, heading back to the Far East. There was one other AA aboard. And the thing about it was, he was maintenance chief in his squadron. I was flight deck troubleshooter in mine. Going over and coming back was fine because we could spend all the time together. But that whole 10 months out there, the only time we got together was in port, just about. So basically, we were alone again. And when you're one of the few alcoholics in 6,000 men, ooh, that's separation. But when things started going bad, and when I was getting into my head again, I'd always get a letter from somebody that, I got one from somebody I knew, but I didn't know she knew me. Lady, it was from one of the meetings. And she sent me a card saying, you know, just thinking about you. And that just about ruined my whole day because I wanted to get on my pity putt, you know. And things happen. I like to share something that, I don't know, it's probably off topic, but higher power had to be working. When I was alone, after I got to be a loner and then I went on the ship, I joined what they call the Internationalists, which is a group inside AA, which is now Loners, Homers, and Internationalists. And we get a newsletter every 2 months. And I got one time. The first thing I do when I open it up, on the back page, they list everybody who wrote in that previous 2 months. And I see if I know anybody on there. And there was a guy, chief petty officer, was in a squadron I was in when I was drinking pretty heavy. And I read his letter and I told the wife, I said, you know, this guy sounds like he's hurting. She says, well, write him a letter. So I wrote him a letter and told him who I was and how I'd been in that squadron years before. Just, you know, little nickel dime stuff. Well, the following 2 months, he wrote another letter. And he said he was on the flight deck one night and he was in the pits, standing at the elevator was down, three decks. We were loaded with bombs for the next day's flight and all the veins sticking up, and he was thinking all he had to do was lean forward a little bit and he would trip over that cable in the dark and it would be a horrible accident and another chief was dead. And he was just about to do it when somebody called him on a headphone and says, hey chief, you got a letter down here. And he went down and it was my letter. Now, I hate to write letters. If my wife was still alive, she would tell you my letters were very few and far between. But that night I wrote to him, and it probably saved his life. So, It's got to be a higher power. I don't do things I don't like to do. You know, I don't go places I don't like to go. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Does everybody in the room know what a letter is? The seventh tradition states that every group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any announcements for the good of AA?
There's one.
Nice and loud. Ralph?
My name is Ralph, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Ralph.
Blue Day Group is having their 16th annual picnic on September the 9th at Woodstock Park on Providence Road in Virginia Beach. It's from 10 to 4. At 12:30 to 1, Riptide, Moscow from the Norfolk Tide will be there to take pictures with the children. It's family oriented. You can bring your pets if you have on the leash. You're all welcome. So come and join us. Thanks, Ralph.
Thanks, Ralph. Any other announcements?
Hey, Sarah. Our home group, Big Book Again, is having their fall speaker event on September 18th. We're having Beth H. from Cary, North Carolina. Potluck will be at 5:30, speaker at 6. It's at Christ in St. Louis Church on Only Road. Bring a dish or see me after for more information.
What's the date on that again?
What's
the date? September 18th, and that speaker that you have wrote one of the stories in the big book, right?
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
Yes.
Stephanie?
Wakefield Campfire Conference coming up next month, last weekend. The website's up and running. It's wakefieldcampfireconference.com. You can register on there. $70 pays for all your meals Friday night, Saturday morning, lunch, dinner, and then Sunday morning. We're going to be doing ice cream socials, there's raffles, there's amazing speakers, it's a good time. See me, there are flyers up there if you need more information, or go to the website.
All right.
I got one.
Anybody else?
Yeah.
Jim?
A week from tomorrow night at the Fifth Tradition Group in Virginia Beach on Rosemont Road, Glenn will be our guest speaker.
Glenn also wrote one of the stories in the big book. I'm kidding. That's just not true. Anybody else? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd just like to get your first name and welcome you.
I'm Melissa, and I'm home.
Hey, Melissa.
Welcome. Anybody else?
I'm Josh, I'm
alcoholic. Hey, Josh.
Welcome. All right. There's literature available on the table or over there. If you can fold it, it is free. Prices of the books are usually marked inside the cover. They're usually not marked inside the cover, but come see us. We'll work out. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Could we please thank our wonderful panel again? Thank you. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. It's a little boutique Mexican place. It's really, really shishi. You're gonna love it. And could I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on 164, please? Nice and loud.
I'm an alcoholic.
Advance.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly expose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great factor for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks for letting me read.
All right, shall we close?
Let's go to the front of the table.
Our Father,